Another special session of the Alaska Legislature, again unable to agree on our budget and fiscal future, and the House and Senate particularly disagree about education funding. What direction should we take? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. We're starting to lose control of our workforce again as our education system slips. You can call now at 550-locally-8422 in Anchorage, outside Anchorage, 1-800-478-8255, or email talk@alaskapublic.org. We're trimming fat or losing the meat of our education system. The subject of Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Alaska Job Corps Center offers training to young people 16 to 24 years old interested in completing their education or starting a career and who meet income eligibility. On-the-job experience is provided in all the training programs, from accounting services to security and protective services. Tweet hashtag CareersBeginHere to learn more. This message is sponsored by Alaska Job Corps Center, Chugach Education Services, Inc.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
The University of Alaska is older than the state. In fact, it's 100 years old, you could argue. Here to talk about its next years is University of Alaska President Jim Johnson. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
Mr. Johnson joins us by digital link from member station KUAC in Fairbanks, but you're sounding very nice and lively there. What's the weather like in Fairbanks today?
It is gusty. The sun rose about 3:30. I got up at 5, took a couple of mile walk on a trail with my corgi dog Harold, and it was a beautiful, beautiful morning. And I just visualized this conversation with you, Steve.
Yes. Well, good. Mm-hmm. And so you're up on the hill.
Yep.
And it's breezy today a bit, but mm-hmm. sunny.
Yes. Yes.
And partly cloudy in Anchorage and still cool, but they're thinking it's going to warm up. It's over, already over 50, which is a big deal. And it's been yes. raining a lot down in the Gulf of Alaska. You probably know that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. And thanks to our member station KUAC in Fairbanks for making this possible. It's kind of set this up at the last minute, and we were really hoping to get State Education Commissioner Michael Johnson, but we couldn't get him scheduled, but we're still going to talk about him even though he's not here. The State Board of Education and the University Regents have formed a joint task force to focus on fostering a, quote, culture of education in the state, mm-hmm. and they have ambitious goals, and culture of education is what we really want to talk about. The federal land grant for the university was approved in 1915. A cornerstone was laid that July, but they didn't really do anything with it for years. The territorial legislature created the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines in 1917, so that's 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. The first students arrived in 1922, just a year before President Warren Harding drove the Golden Spike to complete the Alaska Railroad and then died. While we're here to talk about where the university is going, sometimes it does help to envision a future if you look at where you came from. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the university, you could start with German explorer Otto von Humboldt setting up the first public research university in 1810. Or you could go back to a hot day in Washington, D.C. in 1914, when territorial delegate James Wickersham needed a doorstop and picked up a fat law book, which fell open to the Morrell Act of 1862, the old law that created state land-grant universities for the benefit of the public. He decided to try to get a federal land grant for such a college for the territory, and he succeeded the following year. The Morrell Act also created what became known as cooperative extension to bring the benefits of a public research educational institution directly to the public. Notice how that word public keeps showing up. University of Alaska is a public university. It has public responsibilities. And I'm just delighted, President Johnson, that there's this working together with mm-hmm. the State Board of Education during these difficult times. Because probably, you know, a number of our listeners do think there's fat in the system, and they want to get it wrung out. They want to get it more efficient, and they want it and want it to be lean and mean and doing the things that Alaska needs. But boy, there's so much to talk about when we talk about what Alaska needs. So let's start in. You talk about a leaky funnel between between secondary education, the high schools, the graduation rate, people coming into college but not really ready for it yet, and all of that just really leaky. That's a good word for it.
Well, actually, you know, folks in Alaska often talk about the brain drain in Alaska, and when they talk about that, they're referring to our high school graduates who head outside for college. And by comparison, we have a gusher that's happening in Alaska every single year. And that gusher is comprised of high school dropouts. We have a very high high school dropout rate in the state compared to other states. We have a very low college-going rate compared to other states. And actually, you put those two together, and it's about four times the percentage of students who leave Alaska for college. And then as you pointed out, Steve, when students get here, roughly 40% require some developmental education. And then once they make it through that gauntlet, we have a comparatively low six-year baccalaureate completion rate. Now, there are a lot of reasons for this. And, you know, I think one big one is, at least for the last 40 years or so, we've had what I would characterize as a high-wage, low-education state compared to other states, where and this is increasingly the case, of course, Steve, across the country, the correlation between educational attainment and income. And that correlation, for the statistics nerds out there, is about 0.8, or about 80% of income is a function of education attainment.
Okay, I want to take you back, because I'm not getting it at all.
Okay,
now,
well, the driver—
when I was back in 1957, when Sputnik went up, everybody in my high school class all of a sudden was supposed to go become an engineer. And a whole bunch of them actually did. When ROTC, they didn't even have student loans back then.
Yep.
But they did it. They went ahead and they said, look, you're going to need to have a college degree before you can make any money in this world in very few years. And then we got to that point. Are you saying we're sliding back from that point now?
No, I'm saying nationally that's still the case. In fact, it's even accelerating nationally. North of 90% of the new jobs created in the United States since the Great Recession of 2008 have required a baccalaureate degree. Alaska's economy, though, over the years, particularly since, you know, the oil era, has been able to provide really high-paying jobs for people on average without the kind of education attainment you would see in Massachusetts or Connecticut or even Virginia or places like that.
So, okay.
So what I'm saying is that if we're going to have an economy in 100 years, I hope that there's still some natural resource component to that economy. But increasingly, our economic success is going to be a function of the quality of our brains and the level of education that our workforce possesses. And it's best for turnover and other reasons to have Alaskans with that, with those skills, as opposed to relying on folks like me who came to Alaska in 1983, folks like me to come into the state. Some of us stay here, and that's a really good thing for Alaska, I think, but quite a few churn. And that's especially the case in high demand areas like nursing and teaching. In particular, and I heard a story on the radio this morning, as a matter of fact, about teacher turnover and the high cost of teacher turnover, not just financially, but culturally, psychologically, and educationally. And so that's something we really want to go after to try to, again, one element of this culture of education in Alaska that Commissioner Johnson and I are trying to build. His real strong focus is on readiness for the workforce and readiness for college across Alaska. And our concentration at the university is really to provide more top-notch teachers for Alaska. In fact, the very ambitious, I will admit, goal I've established for the university is that we will prepare 90% of the new teachers hired in Alaska by 2025 versus 30% today.
So very ambitious. You would triple it.
Yeah, that's right.
And let's assume that probably we'll get some shrinkage in our school enrollment, so maybe it won't quite be tripling. Still.
Well, we're going after it. You know, in my view, Steve, it's the single most important job in Alaska, bar none. And
I'm glad to hear you say that, because we have so many retired teachers listen to this program, And they don't. I don't think they get to hear that enough. I mean, I think they retire and they sit around and listen to the radio and wait for shows like this to show up. Well, and nobody ever said anything nice about them.
You know, well, they're super important. There's no question about it. Yeah. They're the ones who are training the next generation, preparing kids for college or the workforce. And you know, that's another thing we need to do to the extent we can is lift up the respect we have for our teachers across the state. Too many times, fingers are pointed at teachers. And as you know, Steve, you've been around the block a time or two. When we point our finger at somebody, there are three fingers pointing back at us. And so I think that the entire community is responsible for the education of our kids and the part that the university can play in it. And there are many parts, but one really important part is to make sure that we're increasing the number of teachers that we're able to prepare for that important job. And Alaskans in particular for that. We've got a lot of really great people in this state who would be superb teachers. And so that is a top priority for us. Another thing that Commissioner Johnson and I are working on real hard is dual enrollment. The regents of the University of Alaska passed a policy to really sort of open up the university to high school kids across the state. And we've got building relationships between school districts, Anchorage School District, for example, Kenai Borough, and several others across the state, where through various mechanisms, high school kids are encouraged to take college-level courses. That is a benefit to everybody, those kids, their families, and certainly to the university, in that they show up here ready to go. But they also have some credits in their pocket.
Wow,
and
yeah.
So they're able to move through our program more quickly. And as I said, they're ready to go, meaning they don't have to take any of those developmental courses that cost them money and don't give them credit. So it's a win-win-win. And I'm really pleased with, again, Mat-Su Borough, Anchorage School District, and others across the state are working hard together on those kinds of initiatives.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got anywhere in higher education without advanced placement, because my high school was so behind the times that I needed to see what things were really like on a real campus with a competitive environment and dormitories and all that, mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of people that were smarter than me, and whether I could. Yeah. all of a sudden you're in the deep end of the pool, and you can drown. I mean, you could get out of high school and. You go to commencement, and they tell you you're commencing your life, and you hit that campus, and man, it, whoa!
Yeah. Well,
I have to do real homework now.
Well, I just named a few programs. I'll name a couple more that are really wonderful. There's Alaska Science Research Academy at one of our universities that brings kids onto campus, and they do real live research with real live scientists.
Yeah,
the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is superb at bringing. Young folks in from all across the state in the summer acceleration academies. RAHI, the Rural Alaska Honors Institute, is another. And so these are really successful programs at bringing young people onto our campuses and making sure they're ready to go when they start out, so they don't drown as you talked about, Steve.
Yeah.
They're swimming at high speed when they get here.
Well, I'm glad we got a few best practices in and a few mm-hmm. shining examples, because it's likely to get depressing from here on in. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. Calls are already coming in. Our guest is the University of Alaska President, Mr. Johnson with an E, and we're looking for your ideas here and your experiences, and we got plenty of them, I'm sure. Navi joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Navi.
Hi, I have a quick question. I mean, I've heard a lot of discussion about metrics and evaluation and sort of these goals that are really tied to, quote, the energy industry in Alaska, but so it's a little bit of a departure. I guess I want to know, Mr. Johnson, what percentage of your matriculating students are Alaska Native? What percentage of those students actually walk across the stage with some kind of degree in their hand or certificate at the end of their study? So basically, what's your dropout rate? How many of us do you lose? But then also, too, what percentage of your tenure-track faculty in the university system are Alaska Native?
Do you want to stay on the line for that one, too? Navi?
Sure.
Okay.
I do not have those numbers right off the top of my head. I can say that student enrollment across the university system, Alaska Native students, is between 15 and 20%, something like that, so pretty high. And in many of our rural campuses, it's 90, 95%. I was at the Nome commencement, for example, recently, and I'd say of the 30 people who completed, 29 were Alaska Native students getting degrees from certificates in high latitude range management to master's degrees in indigenous studies. I think the Fairbanks campus is roughly 15, 16% Alaska Native students, so a strong presentation there at the state's research university. And again, large numbers at the Anchorage campus. There are attainment gaps. There's no question about that. And that's something we need to work on very, very hard. And there are quite a few programs that have been developed to support Alaska Native students and students from rural parts of the state who studied in small schools and perhaps didn't have access to the rich course offerings in more urban schools. And so that is a top priority for us. In terms of Alaska Native faculty, there is no question we are lagging. I don't have the specific number for you there, but there's no question we need more Alaska Native faculty. And that's one of the big reasons for graduate programs and research programs within the University of Alaska. Faculty here and of course, in tribal college here in Alaska and in community campuses, that is a workforce. And in addition to training teachers and nurses and engineers, we need to train faculty, and particularly faculty with, who are Alaska Native, no question about that. So that's one of the reasons why we support research and graduate programs, even though some might say, hey, you should be focusing in on the more prosaic things, perhaps, again, nurses, teachers, et cetera. But I think that graduate programs are critically important, and that will over time drive, I think, more Alaska Native students into scholarship and into our faculties.
Navi?
Yeah, I guess it's interesting because, you know, our foundations that are associated with our regional corporations do an excellent job of supporting Native students. And it's shocking to me to see that, like, I mean, if you look at metrics, which are, you know, of course, you're not going to track them because you don't want to tell a story that's really difficult for you to face, which is that in many ways, the University of Alaska system really perpetuates this colonial mentality. I mean, a lot of it is tied to the lack of ability to fund it appropriately without, like, giving everything over to oil companies. But I guess, my observation and my other question to you is, like, I mean, our foundations do such a good job of preparing Native students for success that if they want us to succeed, they send us out of state. They don't want to send us to our university system here in Alaska because they know that you don't care about us. You can't even name one or two Native tenure track faculty that you have. You said, I don't know those numbers. I mean, can you even name, like, can you guess how many Alaska Native tenure track faculty you have? Like, just a guess.
It's probably 5%. It's low. 5%. I agree with you, Nabi. It's low.
Well, I mean, but what are you going to do about it? Like, you're going to, like, continue to, like, you know, say we need to train, like, scientists and engineers, and then, you know, we're going to try to
continue
the number of teaching,
the
number of people we graduate is, you know, certificated to teach. But, like, if there's no, like, economy in our cities, in our villages, in our towns, in our unorganized boroughs to support and fund teachers, like, what are you going to do? You're going to have a bunch of, like, Native people trained to be teachers and not have jobs? Like, I just don't understand where your rhetoric is going.
Well, yeah, wait a minute. The fact of the matter is there's no tax base in much of rural Alaska. It's funded by the state. It's funded by the educator. You know this. Schools are funded by the state. And that this is not this is not something you ask the university. They're trying to help turn out teachers, and there are many rural districts who would like to have more candidate teachers that were Alaska Native. You know that. You know that's increasing, don't you, Navi?
That might be true, but if you look at where the funding comes to hire faculty, the kind of institutional funding that, like, the university courts and is willing to accept, it doesn't come from, like, actually growing locally sustainable tax bases. And it doesn't do, I mean, there's very little that the University of Alaska system does to, like, separate you know, separate, I mean, I know it's like apples and oranges, but to separate the problem of our economy from the problem of our, like, of our society and culture. I mean, that's, I guess, what I'm getting at. Like, all of this is based upon, like, you know, a lack of a future. Like, planning for the next 100 years in the University of Alaska system, like, let's look at what has done wrong in the past 100 years. Because if we're going to continue replicating that, like, there's never going to be any way for the state to either support or encourage local economies or for, like, any real investment in this, quote, future.
Yeah. Thanks. You've given us a bunch of stuff to think about, Nabi. I'm going to thank you.
Well, Steve, if I could mention the extremely successful Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, even though our budget was cut by $25 million last year, including a cut to ANSEP, the regent stepped up and put another $750,000 into that program, which identifies young Alaska Native kids and others in rural Alaska and exposes them to science and engineering and mathematics in middle school and then all the way through high school. And then when they get to the university, they require no developmental education. They are ready to go. They graduate at very high rates, higher than the average Alaskan student graduates. We indeed now have two faculty at UAA, engineering faculty with PhDs in engineering, who are graduates of the ANSEP program. So that's a highly successful program. And in fact, we are hard at work with the Anchorage School District on the creation of an ANSEP acceleration high school. The I's are not dotted or the T's crossed as yet. But again, the university is reallocating funds into those programs, investing in the future, not simply handing out pro rata cuts, but identifying top priorities and investing in those. I'm absolutely committed to driving that, working with folks in the regional corporations. I certainly appreciate the support they provide through their foundations, and we work closely with them to try to drive students their way, no question about it. They are going to be a major employer in the state. Well, they are now, of course. 9 of the top 10 private corporations based in Alaska are Alaska Native corporations, and I'm confident that in 50 years, 100 years from now, there are many companies that won't be here, but those companies will be here, and we need to do everything we can to support them.
We're speaking with Jim Johnson. He's the president of the University of Alaska, and we're kind of concentrating on the interface in between the secondary education and the higher education system in the state of Alaska. And there's so many different things to talk about. One I want to get to while we're still on technology is, what is this process technology anyway?
Well, process technology is a program. It's typically an associate degree program that was developed in conjunction with the oil, in particular, oil and gas processing industry. And it's a tremendous program. Young people, well, not even young people. There are middle-aged folks who get into this two-year program and learn how to operate sophisticated industrial processes. And the curriculum is developed hand-in-hand with industry. And often the faculty are from industry. And so it is an academic program that focuses people on jobs, good jobs, high-paying jobs in Alaska. So it's a tremendous program and has been a real winner for us and for industry here in Alaska.
You know, I had my morning coffee at the JL Tower in Midtown Anchorage, and that building is full of oil company people. Mm-hmm. I'm stepping out there, and there's the bicycle rack is full, and these are just people that go to work. And I'm thinking, you know, these are part of the explorers. If you were looking for explorers, these, with the price of oil down where it is right now, these people are exploring new technologies at this very mm-hmm. moment that we don't barely understand. And I'm thinking it's kind of we probably don't give it as much respect as we need to.
Well, certainly. I mean, they're explorers, no question about it. And we are too. we produce a lot of engineers who ride their bikes and work in that building. And we conduct a lot of research here at the university. We're the number one research university in the world on Arctic subjects.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
Yep. And we're
Do you think our ranking is in danger? You know, I mean, we are seeing, I mean, the morale ain't great on campus. The budget's uncertain. You're trying to restructure and hitting all kinds of roadblocks. I mean, the resistance is immense. And, you know, we want to keep our high-quality faculty. I know we got a huge mm-hmm. wave. The way we got to be the leaders was, number one, location, but number two, 1957 in the International Geophysical Year that brought these people here. Because the government really invested in that, and they were the professors, and they turned out the great graduate students that are now the professors and nearing retirement age, and their graduate students. You know, ultimately, it really comes down to who's really going to bring out the brilliance in the people that are going to the schools and really encourage mm-hmm. them and let them know what they're really capable of, and so much hard work between here and there.
No question about it. And I would say that, again, like the ANSEP story where the budget got cut last year from the legislature and we went ahead and cut deeper in order to invest in ANSEP, same thing with research. We were cut deeper and we invested in research last year, and we will be meeting with the Board of Regents later this week. Uncertainty abounds, of course, because we don't have a budget yet from the state. But under most of the planning scenarios that we have developed and we'll talk about with the regents this week, we will continue to invest in top priorities, including research. It's a really interesting world because it's not a local labor market or even a regional labor market or perhaps even a state labor market for research faculty. It's a national and international labor market. And as our economy is heading south, right now, the economy across the rest of the country and in other parts of the world is heading north. And so competition for top-notch researchers is tough, no question about it. And then as you mentioned, Steve, the funding at the federal level is in question as it is here at the state. So there is a great deal of uncertainty out there. But Alaskans have dealt with a lot of uncertainty over the years. And my view is we will continue to make the right investment decisions, focusing on our top priorities, workforce development, you know, working on that culture of education that we talked about earlier this morning, research, and then also, real importantly, economic development and diversification. We've been talking about that for decades here in Alaska, and it's something we need to keep a really strong focus on. And that's directly tied to research because it's out of our labs, it's out of our classrooms, out of our research field stations that the new technologies will emerge and hopefully new businesses will be created.
It's Talk of Alaska. Yes, thank you. It's Talk of Alaska, 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, and email is talk@alaskapublic.org, and I got so excited I forgot to even look at it, but I will in a second, and I will take this call now from Anchor Point and Kate. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Kate.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
All right. I would just like to mention, I've worked a lot in Southeast Asia, in Vietnam, India, Myanmar, and Thailand with Cambodian refugees. And just as a perspective, as soon as people stop spending so much money on killing each other and war activities, so people can actually grow up healthy and get educated, they do that right away. And the fact that our legislature is dithering about where to prioritize education is mind-boggling to me and so unbelievably short-sighted. Education is the key to a functioning society. And how can the legislature even imagine not making education one of the highest priorities? Now, I know you're focused right now on higher education, high school and college and stuff, and that's so, so, so important, and I've really enjoyed the discussion. But let's look at early education. Let's look at preschool. Let's look at kindergarten, where kids learn to love to learn. Because unless that happens, we won't have high school graduates. They'll drop out at the rate that you're saying they drop out at. We need to change that, and we can't start in high school. We have to start earlier. So I beg the legislature to please, please see that education is one of the highest priorities. Healthcare is to me as well. I'm a nurse, and I can't, the fact that we're fitting about that is mind-boggling to me as well. But we're talking about education here. So please look at what countries have done when they've lost everything and how they restart. They restart with healthcare and education, knowing that that is the foundation of a society, of a culture that works. That's what I have to say. Thank you.
Well, Kate, very well said. You know, there's a strong correlation, of course, between economics and education. And you talk about early education. I completely agree with you that we have to early on teach kids how to learn. And often that's done in the home before kids even show up at school in those early grades. And one of the biggest predictors of how kids will do in even the early grades is whether there's a job in the home. And so to the extent we can work both sides of this, you know, Steve used the metaphor of a pipeline earlier, a leaky funnel, if you will. But to the extent we can shore up those leaks from the very beginning, before kids even show up in preschool, that will help the whole education process all the way along. And then I think end up with stronger employment situation, stronger economy, which again feeds back into improved performance of our kids before they even start school. So good points. And another thing that interests me is I look at a lot of other states and how they fund education, prioritize education. And it's really interesting, particularly to watch states that have not had strong economies for a long time and how they have made education number one in their states, how they have made it their competitive advantage in growing their economies and providing for their people. Right off the top of my head, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, these are states that have made education, Texas, have made education number one. Even California, back in the 60s with the Master Plan for Higher Education there. So I completely agree that we, if we make education number one in our state, so many other good things will come from that.
Yeah, Kate, you're kind of preaching to the choir, but it was very heartfelt. Thanks for your call.
Let me just mention one more thing that I know it doesn't matter. Well, it sort of does to me, at any point where one steps in a broken system, it's useful. Any place one steps in to try to make it better. But I'm really going to plug for early education and money for the educational system, the public education system. Thank you.
All right. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Their online, evening, and campus-based courses make education accessible and will fit into any busy schedule. Be motivated by a devoted faculty and creative, independent-minded students. Apply now at alaskapacific.edu. Moving life ahead with APU. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Talk, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. It's a live program, and our guest is the president of the University of Alaska, Jim Johnson, with us remotely by digital link from our member station KUAC in Fairbanks. And we're talking about education in all the different features But we're trying to, you know, what can the university do? And the university's got a large order in front of it. And the regents are about to meet in Juneau, while the special session, we can assume, will still be going on. So you're going to look at your research budget, Jim, and what else?
Oh, we're certainly looking at workforce development. We are looking at, well, two sets of things, basically. Depending upon what the legislature may come up with, how do we reduce in order to meet that number? And what do we invest in? Because we absolutely must continue to invest in growth and in meeting the state's needs, no matter what the number is that comes from the legislature. Now, we've taken some big cuts over the last several years. 14% over the last 3 years. 927 fewer people are working at the University of Alaska, from Ketchikan in southeast to Kotzebue in the northwest, and over 50 degree and certificate programs are either being discontinued or have been discontinued. We still have over 400. So on the bright side of things, we've got tremendous research going on. We've got over 400 degree and certificate programs available. Almost 5,000 people across the state walked across the stage and graduated, completed something really important in their lives just this spring. And that'll happen next spring, too, and the spring after that. So there's a tremendous amount of goodness happening at the university, and students are making it through and getting jobs. In fact, I mentioned earlier I was in Nome for their commencement this spring. 30 people graduated, including a young gentleman of 72 years old getting his certificate in reindeer herding. And of course, he's a reindeer herder. Generations of reindeer herders have been in his family. But it was really a remarkable thing and a tremendous celebration of his steadfastness, of his persistence, that the whole community really enjoyed. So we're making a difference in people's lives and in families' lives and in communities' lives. And we're going to keep doing that, no question about it. We face challenges. I mean, Steve, you mentioned the land grant. We're a land grant university without the land. Only Delaware.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, seriously, only Delaware got a smaller land grant than we did. States like Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, wonderful states, lovely people, got larger land grants than we did. And there's a long story, history about all of that, culminating in 2009 when the state Supreme Court invalidated a legislative land grant to the university. We're working on that. We've got a strategy working the federal side and then the state side as well. I briefed the legislature and the governor and our federal delegation on that this past year. So we're moving that, but it's been 100 years since we've not had it. So it's going to take some time, certainly, to achieve to fix that land grant deficit, no question about it. But 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 100 years from now, it's going to make a big difference. So that's a top priority for us. We are focused on the near term, but we're absolutely looking out 10 years, 20 years, and out beyond that. So that by 2117, folks are looking back at the decisions that were made in 2017 saying, wow, those folks had it tough, but they made some good calls. They made some mistakes. But they made some good decisions, and because of those good, strong decisions those people made, look at what we've got today here in 2117.
Investments, such a difficult time to even think about it when you're having to cut your budget. Mm-hmm. Chiming in along the lines of what Kate said earlier was an email comment from out in the valley. Who would dare, let's see if I can just get a copy, who would dare say we're trimming the fat from an education budget after they've increased class sizes to 36. And of course, they're talking about it in high schools, but still, quite a comment. Tony in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska with the University of Alaska President Jim Johnson.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to make a point on something that you said. Yes, in most of rural Alaska, there is not an economic help for economic development. However, the North Slope borough is doing fine. The Northwest Arctic borough is doing fine. The Yakutat borough and the Bristol Bay borough are doing fine. Now, the point about all that is the state government is an extractive state, and all of the resources are in rural. Most of the oil and gas is. all of the timber, all of the fisheries. And those should be taken into account when you consider statewide distribution of resources. And those of us from rural Alaska, and I'm originally from the Bethel area, see that all the time. And the formula for post-secondary education, or for education for that period, has undergone several changes. And one issue that has been facing a lot of the students who come from rural Alaska is the fact that they are in what we called in the 1960s bonehead classes at the University of Alaska. And they're still paying the full tuition for taking those classes that have no credit. And what is the university going to do with that? I know there are several programs. One is the Alaska Native Studies, now the Alaska Rural Studies program at UAF, and the Alaska Native Studies here in Anchorage. I don't know what they have in Southeast. I just wondered what the philosophy is about recognizing that the resources are coming from rural and the benefit comes to urban most of the time, and all the governmental activities, rules and regulations are in urban. And what direction is ANSTEP, for instance, going to take in terms of developing scientists, if that's what you want them to be, or engineers, to go into these kinds of industries?
Well, thank you, Tony. A great question. The rural campuses of the University of Alaska are critically important. You know, folks say to me when I'm at the airport or, you know, at various events around the state, why don't you, you know, I can solve your budget problem for you, Johnson, just cut those rural campuses. And I respond with a capital N and a capital no. Having attended commencements at Bethel, Nome, and other campuses all across the state, you see the value, the huge value of those campuses in those communities and the partnerships that those faculty, staff, students are able to form with village corporations, with private for-profit companies, with tribal organizations and governments, et cetera, are critically important. In terms of, you know, you use the term bonehead classes, we use the term developmental classes, and we're working hard to bring the numbers of students who need those courses down, working with the DEED folks, you know, Department of Education and Early Development, and with school districts across the state to try to reduce that to zero. That would be ideal. If our students came out of our high schools, whether it's in Anchorage or in Shishmaref, ready to go either for the workforce or for college. A couple of important programs. You mentioned ANSEP. That's certainly one that we're going to continue supporting and continue growing, and also see about how we might expand it so that ANSEP graduates are going into nursing school, ANSEP graduates are going into teaching, and in other areas, because we need teachers with math backgrounds and perhaps engineering backgrounds and science backgrounds, certainly. A dual enrollment I talked about, where high school students in the state are actually taking courses with university faculty and getting credit both in high school and in college. The Matsu Middle College, for example, all of those kids graduate from high school. 75% of them go to a university campus with college, no developmental requirements. They meet it, just like the ANSEP kids. They don't require any developmental coursework. The Alaska Performance Scholarship is another really important contribution to high school student readiness because it requires, you know, if a kid wants to get that money, they've got to take a rigorous high school curriculum. And it turns out that only about 25% of the kids who qualify for that scholarship require any kind of developmental coursework, as opposed to almost double that for kids who don't qualify.
Question. Yeah, thank you. Tony, let's say you were on the Regents. That's not a huge stretch. Tony, what would you say at the Regents meeting to move in the direction you'd like to see it move with this extraction economy and the value coming out of the rural parts of the state and yet not getting captured in the educational system there?
Well, a couple of things for the Regents. One, you need to strengthen the academic requirements, and a lot of these programs are not academically oriented, which is fine. I mean, they have to be able to train people not just in the academic skills that I happen to have, but in other areas, they have skills that are applicable to the industries that are coming to Alaska. Mining, for instance, is a good one. Even though I may have some hesitancy about promoting that because it interferes with the activities in the rural villages for hunting, fishing, gathering, which is my big concern. All of these kinds of things intertwine, and they're hard to put together in a single mind. You talk to people, for instance, from Kenai. Yes, they care about the bears. Yes, they care about the fish, but they're more interested in the oil economy, the gas economy of the Cook Inlet. The Board of Regents needs to understand that there's a balancing act there, and the president of the university needs to understand that Alaska is very different from where he came. And when we say we want rural teachers, there's a tendency in the rural teachers recruiting to be from Oklahoma, Idaho, places that are considered rural in the lower 48, but don't even compare to what rural is in Alaska.
Tony, I'm pretty sure the university president knows about that factor.
I sure do.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in teachers in Bethel, or folks in Bethel becoming teachers in Bethel and doing what we can to support those folks. I would note, Tony, I really appreciate your point about mining. We've got a very successful mine training program, training quite a few Alaska Native young people to pursue that occupation, and then also mining engineering, quite rigorous program there as well.
Yeah, but it is a balancing act. That's one thing that Tony was really stressing.
That's a good point.
I want to take our little break here and then get back to enrollment, which we haven't even started on yet as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
It's Talk of Alaska. It's kind of a fun discussion with Jim Johnson, president of the University of Alaska, and Dolly, is she ready already? Is she all set up? No? Okay. Okay, well, let's take this up then from Mike. President Johnson, can you comment on the declining enrollments at UA? I've seen double-digit declines at my campus year over year. And what if you had a university and no one came?
It concerns me a lot. Just step back a moment. Our enrollments have been declining since 2011. Not simply at the beginning of this economic recession here in Alaska. And so that's a challenge. One of the reasons why is declining production from high schools. That's a factor. Another factor is the economy. And between 11 and 15, there were lots of jobs out there. And often enrollments in universities work, particularly community colleges that are part of universities, work in opposite directions to the economy. So as the economy improves, enrollments go down, and when economies go down and job unemployment goes up, then enrollments frequently go up again, particularly in community college type programs. And we have a lot of those. We've got 12 community colleges across the state, three universities. So it concerns me a lot. You could even step back even further, back to 1975. When about 6.3% of Alaskans were a student at one of our campuses across the state. Today, it's about 4.3%. Now, fortunately, the population has grown, and it masks that enrollment decline to some extent. But, you know, that's a huge reduction, if you will, in market share from 6.3 to 4.3 in relative terms.
Do you think,
so it concerns me a lot.
Yeah. Do you think some of your restructuring could ease the way for – I mean, I know a lot of people who are, you know, struggling to complete their educations and having trouble with the bureaucratic side of higher education in Alaska. Transferability of credits, these weird prerequisites. It goes on and on and on and on. And it seems like it's very, very hard to do any icebreaking to get through any of that stuff. I know you're trying. But.
Oh, yeah. It's a big challenge and a big opportunity, of course. Credit transfer is just, you know, all of our credits transfer. They may not transfer to a particular degree, but every credit taken at the University of Alaska transfers to another University of Alaska campus.
And of course, you're going to have to raise tuition again. I just know it.
Yep. Well, let me talk about tuition. We're the most affordable tuition in the United States. Our tuition at the University of Alaska is 19% below the Western states average. That's a fact. And I understand that it may be difficult for students to afford it. Our debt levels are low compared to other states as well. So affordability is an issue, and we strive to, as we make these budget reductions and make investments in growth, to manage that that tuition so it continues to be affordable for our students. But, you know, we lead the country. Here's another number one for Alaska, right? There are so many of these. But one of them is that the percentage of our population with some college and no degree, about 115,000 Alaskans in that situation. And we're working hard to figure out ways to get to those people and help them finish their degrees so that they can take that next step in their careers and in their lives. And frankly, those folks, most of them, are not going to quit their jobs or move to a big city to take classes Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 to 11:30. It's going to need to be online, and it's going to need to be convenient, high quality, rigorous academically, but it's going to need to be really focused on their convenience.
I sense a market niche there.
A big one, and that's the language we're using, and developing approaches to get out there. And that's going to take marketing. It's going to take program development. It's going to take programs that are really streamlined. We have a number of them. We have completely online program in business and business administration, for example.
This is made for the hard sell. I could do commercials for those. I can envision it right now. You want to get your degree, and here's why.
Sunday, right? But that is a major push. So we certainly are interested in those traditional high school graduates and helping them with their higher educations. But there's a huge number of Alaskans, former military people, former oil field people, all fishing people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, who've got some college and would like a convenient but rigorous way to finish up. And we want to be here for them so that they can accomplish that.
Dolly in Fairbanks, you're on the air with University President Jim Johnson.
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet.
Great. Hi, thank you very much. And I want to appreciate my son, Justin. He had graduated this year at UAF with high accomplishments.
All right.
Petroleum engineering.
Wow. Congratulations, Dolly.
Oh, thank you. And I want to really encourage all of them. You know, it may be hard, you know, for everyone to get their accomplishments up there. But, you know, once they get to the end, it really makes a big difference. And when, you know, encourage all those people out there to do what you got to do to, you know, I know it may be hard to, you know, try and get in, do what you got to do to get into the college. At the end, it really makes a big difference, and it really did for our son, Justin.
Well, I've got a big smile on my face, Dolly, and I really thank you for that. And it reminds me of
She's got such a big smile, she can hardly talk about it.
Well, when I was on the stage, and hopefully Justin walked by, and I shook his hand along with 1,399 other hands at the commencement in Fairbanks here recently.
That's what they pay you the big bucks for, huh?
That's right. And I still have a sore forearm for shaking 1,400 hands that afternoon.
My heart bleeds.
But I'll tell you.
You.
Oh, I know. But seriously. You know, you just smile and smile and smile as you watch these young people and older people too walk across that stage, having accomplished something really important for themselves and for their families, as Dolly is sharing with us right now, the communities and the state. It's just a tremendous celebration of the difference the University of Alaska makes in the lives of its people. So it's a really nice call. Thank you.
Yeah, we're getting close to the end of the show and ending on an up note. I never dreamed that would happen. Dario joins the program from Valdez. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Dario.
Thank you. I guess I have two separate directions that I want.
Okay, but you only got about a minute and a half for them, so.
Okay, the first, I guess, is as a way to cut costs, look back to Alaska Methodist University about 69 when they had a hockey team, and that hockey team was a low-budget hockey team, played in the Anchorage City League, and the students loved it as much as if Notre Dame was showing up or University of Michigan.
Oh, wow. Now you're, we could do the whole show on that.
And
we could easily do the whole show on the athletic program. Yeah, go ahead, Dario.
The other one is that I grew up in a home that my dad went to college late in life. Mm-hmm. So I grew up without the expectation of going. And then I went late in life. And so I never taught my older kids to pursue education. And finally, my second youngest is starting her junior year this year in engineering.
Good.
Just a shout out. Support your education. Support your kids.
Yeah. Thank you, Dario. And I want to spring off while we got just a few seconds here, Chancellor Johnson. What about the athletic program? Can we get it around to where it's generating a bit more money and a little bit closer to supporting itself?
We sure can, and that's what our chancellors at UAA and UAF are doing, working with the communities to try to generate a bit more revenue so that we're able to sustain these programs. You know, they do a lot for the community. I mean, UAA, for example, this year won the all-sports championship for the conference. 7 out of 11, I think it is, teams. I may be off there a number or two. But the top athletic program in the entire conference this year. And that's a great accomplishment there. But we do need to work with our partners in the private sector and the communities to step up
Share of funding. Right? That money could go to a lot of good places if it wasn't going into athletics.
Yeah, I agree with you, and those folks are working with us to try to make that happen. You know, one thing I want to mention too, when Dario talked about his dad going to school late, yeah, and that intergenerational function of education is really a big thing, and that's one of the reasons why we need to try to have more Alaskan teachers and more Alaskans going to school, because then the next generation and the next generation will benefit from that. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today and to speak with Alaskans about what I think is the single most important institution in our state, because our mission is our people, number one, and their education.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Jim Johnson, President of the University of Alaska. Thanks for being with us on the show.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I want to thank, what do you know, Dave Waldron on the controls. And Wesley Early on the phones did a great job, you guys. Lori Neufeld, cooperating at KUAC, making it all sound great. And thank you so much for listening. I'm going to be back for another Talk of Alaska on the 4th of July. We're going to talk about seceding. What if the state of Alaska seceded, and all of a sudden the U.S. didn't have a claim to the Arctic? Think about it. Bye now.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.